As always, it is a privilege to share some thoughts with you this morning, some things that I've been thinking about for quite some time and had some discussions with some individuals here in the recent months, and these things just seem to stand out more and more for me all the time. And I want to share these thoughts with you this morning and encourage you to look at people a little bit differently. I ask for Matthew 7, 1 through 23 to be read, because verse 1 is often quoted to us to condemn us for making judgments. And so this morning I would like for you, for the next few moments with me, think about how you judge. What kind of judgment you make. I was watching a clip on Facebook the other day, and it was one of those talent show things, and the judges were observing an individual coming on to do their talent, and as this individual was coming on, they were very negative in the response to this individual coming on, this young man. His hat was on backwards. He wasn't the well-dressed, and when they were talking with him, conversing with him, asking his name and what he did, he said, well, he was a chicken catcher. I know that was a big, funny response, and as I thought about that, and as I think about it even now, and he even went on to tell them that six men would catch 6,000 chickens in a night, 6,000, I think it was 60,000 chickens in a night. And you know what? You can make light of that all you want to, but you need chicken catchers, because chicken catchers put the chickens in the crates that take them to the slaughterhouse. You need the chicken catcher. It's not a funny job. You need ditch diggers, don't you? And we ought not to judge a person just by their appearance. When this young man opened his mouth and began to sing, their opinion immediately changed. Why? That's what this lesson is about this morning. For a long time, I've thought about Mrs. Job. You know, I really think at times, and at least in my memory as a young boy and sermons that I heard and in things that individuals said during class periods that I was a part of, I think that Mrs. Job really has gotten a bad rap. Things like, poor Job, what a terrible wife to say such a thing. All of the suffering that he's going through, and she says something like this. Well, I'd like for you to consider Job's wife with me for just a moment. Job's wife lost 10 children too, didn't she? All in one day. 10 children that she gave birth to. As I was thinking about this, I was thinking about the fact that when Darlene and I lost a child back in 1981 on January the 14th, she would have been 2 months old January the 15th. As I think about that, the suffering I went through was different than the suffering that she went through. And we both lost a child. Her grief was stronger, I think, in some ways than mine, because she bore that child. She had a connection with that child 9 months longer than I really did. Now, I felt her tummy and I felt the baby kick and all of those kind of things, but she carried that child for 9 months and then held it in her arms for 2 months. And I remember one time we were talking about the fact that some lady who had had a child about the same time brought the baby to Darlene and was going to let her hold it. And Darlene said, no, that's fine. And as we were talking about it later, she says, I don't want to hold someone else's baby. I want to hold my baby. Now, put Mrs. Job in that connection with those thoughts. This woman is truly suffering. She's carried these children for 9 months. She gave birth to these children. She's cared for these children through their lifetime. She's wiped their noses. She's cleaned their dirty diapers or whatever they may have had in those days. Whatever it was, she has cared for these children. She's watched these children. She's protected these children. She's done all of those kind of things. She has loved them as only a mother can love her children. She has lost her wealth. She's lost her position in the community. Her husband is also now sick and needs to be cared for. And who's going to care for him? Mrs. Job. Now, in fact, I would even add to this. Do you note that in the book of Job that God does not condemn Mrs. Job? Now, please don't misunderstand. I'm not saying that he was happy with what she said. I think that he took that what Job responded was sufficient for her. You speak as one of the foolish women. I think some of those things are really important for us to keep in mind when we think about this woman. She's going through grief, and sometimes you say dumb stuff. When Darlene passed away, I know now there were some things that I said that just were just dumb. And if I had it to do over again, I would probably, in all likelihood, say something different because of the experience I've had thus far. But still, you just say some dumb things sometimes, and we need to remember that. In fact, I remember someone telling me one time, I think it was my son-in-law, who was telling me about the fact that a co-worker of his had lost her husband. And during the visitation, there was a lady that we knew very well who had lost her husband several years prior to this. And as she was going through the line and she came to the woman who had just lost her husband, she responded to her, "Been there, done that." I don't know how you feel, but that's one of those dumb things that we say at funerals when we think we have to say something, isn't it? I think at funerals sometimes the best thing we could do is be like Job's three friends before they began to speak. Keep our mouth shut so that dumb things don't fall out. I absolutely think so. I understand that that woman had experienced the same loss, a husband's loss. But she may not have had the same relationship with her husband that this woman had with her husband. There's a whole lot of things that may have been different, and that summation may not really add up. Mightn't it? I know that there have been men who have lost their wives in the past, and I know that they suffered because of that. I lost my wife too, and I suffered because of that. But our suffering may not have been the same. I know some of those men have expressed the idea, and especially in some of the reading I did when I lost Darlene, that they had some anger issues with God. I don't remember having any anger issues with God. I had anger issues with Raymond. And so there are those kind of things that I think are very important for us to keep in mind. Can you understand how much Mrs. Job was suffering? Do you think that maybe we ought to be a little more merciful? Do you think that we might not judge her quite so harshly as we do sometimes? You know, there's an old adage that says that we ought to walk in someone else's shoes. Well, when I was in Illinois holding a gospel meeting there a few months ago, there were some signs along the road, and it said, one of them said, "You never know someone else's struggle." Amen. That is absolutely true. I do not know what you all have struggled with. I do not know what you're struggling with now. You do not know those things specifically about me. And we need to keep that kind of thing in mind when we judge other people. And then there are those who come to Matthew 7:1, and they will say to us, see, you're not to judge. They'll quote it, do not judge so that you are not judged. See, you're not supposed to judge. I'll tell you what, that's what people do. And in fact, that's what people accuse me of, is cherry picking the scriptures. That's exactly what this person does when they take Matthew 7 out of its context and make it say something that it doesn't say. And what they simply are making it say is, you do not have the right to judge me. A lot of people talk about cherry picking the scriptures, especially with us. Because we'll use this passage, like Matthew 28:18-20, Mark 16:15-16, Acts 2:38. We put them together and say that baptism is necessary, and they'll say we're cherry-picking the Scriptures. You take any one of those passages in the Scriptures, in their context, and they still say what they say by themselves. This passage in Matthew 7 does not. All you have to do is read verse 2. And you understand what the judging of verse 1 is talking about. And it's really important for us to be careful about that. I'm afraid so many misuse this passage when they say that you're not to judge. They basically are just simply saying that you can't make any moral judgments about them or any criticisms of their lifestyle. And it misses the entire context of Matthew 7:1. Let's look at that Matthew 7:1 context. In fact, I think that the entire passage down through verse 23 says a lot about judging. In fact, verse 1 is a warning, isn't it? Yes, it absolutely is. It's a warning that we need to be careful about judging other people. And verse 2 tells us why, doesn't it? It absolutely does. It cautions us about the way we judge and the kind of standard that we use when we judge someone. Important to understand not only verse 1, but verse 2 as well. The way I judge others is the way that I'm going to be judged. That's what I'm told in those two verses. And then look at the very next four verses, verses 3 through 6. Here Jesus gives us an example of exactly what he's talking about in verses 1 and 2. Notice, and I really think it's important for us to notice that Jesus does not tell this person with the log in his eye not to take the speck out of his brother's eye. What he tells him is to take the log out of his eye so that he can see to take the speck out of his brother's eye. In fact, I remember a young preacher telling me some time ago that when he first, I think this was in his first 5 years of preaching. He was in a particular place and he'd just finished preaching a sermon. And when he got down and the service ended, one of the individuals came to him and said, "You need to repent because you've been using bywords." Anybody here know what a byword is? Please, if you do, hold up your hand. I want to know if you know what that means. Because when he told me this, I didn't have a clue. I didn't have a clue. And I was with, where I grew up was within 3 hours of the place that he was preaching at the time. Well, you see, that idea of bywords is empty words or filler words, space fillers, so to speak. And what I understand this young man had said was, he was talking about the passage in Matthew 5, verse 29, where Jesus says that if your right eye offends you, pluck it out. And he's, and this young man and his preaching, and again, remember he was a young preacher, and we don't always, preachers don't always use the best selection of words. And he says, pluck that sucker out and throw it away. And so when this gentleman is talking to him about that, he's unwilling to explain to him what bywords are. He repeatedly asked him to tell me what you mean by this. And he refused. You know, was his response. Now, he has condemned him, hasn't he? He absolutely has. Whether he used a good word or not, it really doesn't matter. He's condemned him, but won't tell him what he's condemned for. You know what a creek is? Creek is? You know what a crick is? Depends on what part of the country you come from, doesn't it? I grew up as a boy going down the creek and picking up Indian beads. You know what Indian beads are? I got a whole jar of them at home. They're just little fossilized plants. We always called them, in where I grew up, we always called them Indian beads. Well, sometimes where you grow up explains things. And if you didn't grow up there, you haven't got a clue, do you? We judge people just way too harshly sometimes. And I think it's so important for us to not do that. Let us be careful. Let us take the warning of verse 1 and apply it to our heart and mind so that we don't do this. Look at verse 6. Isn't he telling us that we have to discern between some things? And isn't discerning making judgment? In fact, the Cambridge Dictionary says that discernment is the ability to judge people and things well. And I just had to go to Wikipedia. You know, it's the place to find out everything. And Wikipedia says, discernment is the ability to obtain sharp perceptions or to judge well, or the activities or of so doing. In the case of judgment, discernment can be psychological or moral in nature. Within judgment, discernment involves going past the mere perception of something and making nuanced judgments about its properties and qualities. Considered as a virtue, a discerning individual is considered to process wisdom and be of good judgment, especially so with regard to the subject matter often overlooked by others. An awful lot to just simply say the ability to judge people and things well. That's what discernment is. It's making a judgment. It's observing something and understanding what's all about. Look at verse 12. Verse 12, that's what I grew up being told was the golden rule. Judge. Or, in fact, treat people the way you want to be treated. Yeah. That's what I was always told. This clearly applies to how we make judgments, doesn't it? This verse calls on me to make judgments the way I want to be judged. If I want people to judge me fairly and squarely, then I need to return the favor to them as well, don't I? Don't we make judgments in how we treat others? Being a preacher, you get to talk to a lot of people. And I've talked to a lot of single people in my lifetime, and one of the things I remember, one young man said in his observation that while he was single, he was a creepy guy. That's how he felt, because people made him feel that way. And he said, and if you were a single girl, you were sad. I guess because you weren't married. I'm not just exactly sure, but here are the kind of judgment people, things that people make you feel like because of some situation that you're in. Or the divorced person, a person who is divorced right according to Matthew 19 and verse 9. The person who has put away their spouse because they have committed fornication. And people may not say it in these exact words, but they're thinking things like this or similar things. You must have done something wrong.
Yeah.
And you know what? Romans 3:23, for all have sinned and fallen short of the glory of God. Absolutely. Yes, I know I've done something wrong. But my spouse committed adultery. And God gives me the right to put them away for that cause. Well, you didn't try hard enough to reconcile. Please correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't remember a passage telling me that I have to reconcile with a spouse that has committed fornication. Not that I can't, but I don't know of any passage that tells me that I have to or that I have to work hard at it. And what if my spouse has committed fornication repeatedly over several years? I've been working at trying to keep the family together, but it isn't happening. Or something like this. Wouldn't you want God to forgive you? As if the fact that you put them away is you're saying you're not forgiving them? I think the Bible carries with this the idea that I can put my spouse away at the same time having forgiven them. I can be at a point in life where I don't want to put up with it anymore. It's going to be too much baggage for me to carry on, and I need to leave it behind. We need to think about things like that. I think it's vital in our ability to judge people in a fair and honest and caring way. Or the individual who says, a woman wouldn't leave a good man. Or a man wouldn't leave a good woman. As if you're a bad woman or a bad man. Friends, they do it all the time. Look at the world. It's happening all the time, those kind of things. Now, look at verses 13 and 14. What are they calling on us to do? Isn't it about a choice between things? It's making a choice. I've got to make a choice. I've got to choose something here. In fact, making a choice means that we have to make some kind of judgment. Jesus is telling us that our choice, we've got a choice in life. Which path am I going to take? Which path am I going to spend my life on? And then drop down to verses 15 through 20. Verse 15 tells me to avoid evildoers. If I can't judge, how can I possibly do that? I just don't understand. How can I avoid evildoers and not make some kind of judgment? He tells me that you know a tree by its fruit. It's either a good tree by good fruit or a bad tree by bad fruit. I'm making a judgment. Is that fruit good or is it bad? That's a judgment on my part. And that calls on me making a judgment about the fruit. He explains there in verses 17 through 20. We're being called upon to recognize evil and good in individuals and the things that they teach. Notice that in verses 21 through 23, that there's more to pleasing Jesus than calling Him Lord. You've heard people say, I've made Jesus the Lord of my life. Well, let's see it in your life. Let's see what Paul says in Galatians 2 and verse 20, in your life. Jesus Christ living in you. There will be evidence of that, will there not? You know, it really is important for us to remember that we will be judged the way we judge. And so it's not that we discount verse 1 of Matthew 7. What we do say, and I believe clearly that the context bears it out, that there's more to the passage than that one statement in verse 1. In fact, consider John 7. In John 7 and verses 19 through 24. John 7, verses 19 through 24. He answered and said to them, O unbelieving generation, how long shall I be with you? How long shall I put up with you? Bring him to me. And they brought the boy to him. When he saw him, immediately the spirit threw him into a convulsion, and falling to the ground, he began rolling around and foaming at the mouth. And he asked the father, how long has it been happening to him? And he said, from childhood, it has often thrown him both into the fire and into the water to destroy him. But if you can do anything, take pity on us and help us. And Jesus said to him, if you can, all things are possible to him who believes. And immediately the boy's father, well, that's good, because that's not Matthew 7 or John 7. No wonder it didn't make any sense. What are we reading about that for? Let's try this again. Verse 19 of Matthew 7. Did not Moses give you the law, and yet none of you carries out the law? Why do you seek to kill me? The crowd answered, you have a demon. Who seeks to kill you? And Jesus answered them, I did one deed and you all marvel. For this reason Moses has given you circumcision, not because it was from Moses, but from the fathers. And on the Sabbath you circumcise a man. If a man receives circumcision on the Sabbath so that the law of Moses will not be broken, are you angry with me because I made an entire man well on the Sabbath? Do not judge according to appearance, but judge with righteous judgment. That makes a whole lot more sense, doesn't it? Judge with righteous judgment. Don't judge according to the appearance. Humans tend to judge people the moment we see them. We either think they're good or they're bad, basically because of the way they look, the way they're dressed. We are cautioned here to be careful not to make that kind of judgment about people. Again, there in verse 24, do not judge according to appearance, but judge with righteous judgment. How exactly do we judge with righteous judgment? Well, let's go back to Matthew 7 and let's just look at what we looked at and learned there. Verses 1 and 2 tell us to be cautious, to be careful about our judgments or in our judgments. In verses 3 through 6, we're to have discernment, of the ability to discern between things. And that means that before we try to help someone else with their sin in their life, we need to make sure that we're taking care of the sin that's in our own life. In verse 12, we're to judge others the way we want to be judged by them. And then in verses 13 and 14, that aspect of verse 12 has a lot to do with the path we choose in life, doesn't it? And then, in verses 15 through 20, we're to look at the fruit that is produced. What kind of fruit do you see in this person's life? What kind of fruit are they producing? In fact, the proverb writer warns us about judging too soon. In Proverbs 18 and verse 17, he says, the first to plead his case seems just until another comes and examines him. You see, immediate judgments, like those judges on that program, immediate judgments are not always best. In fact, the proverb writer again says in Proverbs 29 and verse 20, do you see a man who is hasty in his words? There is more hope for a fool than for him. And then in Proverbs 14 and verse 12, and also a similar statement made in chapter 16 and verse 25, there is a way that seems right to a man, but the end is the way of death. I need to be very careful about how I judge. We need to have all of the facts. We need all of the information. Most of the time, we make judgments without very many facts, without knowledge of some things. Again, it reminds me of those road signs in Illinois. You never know someone else's struggle. I need to know more information most of the time. In fact, what if you were walking up behind someone and you're saying, excuse me, sir, I need some help over here. You think he's an assistant in the Walmart. He's a Walmart greeter. I don't know. And so you're walking up to him behind, to his back, and you're saying, I need your help, sir. Sir, can you help me? Help. You go up and put your hand on him. He turns around, and you find out he was deaf. Maybe you were saying, what's wrong with this jerk? Certainly wouldn't be past us to make that kind of assumption, right? We do it all the time because somebody, as we're driving down the road, somebody cuts us off. Oh, what a jerk. I know you've said it. Some of you anyway. Yeah, guilty. But he needed to get over. Have you ever been in that position? You just needed to get over and there was no other room. I got to get in there? Yeah. We need to remember our actions too, right? In Hebrews 5 and verse 14, the writer says, but solid food is for the mature who, because of practice, have their senses trained to discern good and evil. The ability to make righteous judgments should grow as we mature spiritually. In Psalm 7 and verse 11, God is a righteous God or a righteous judge and a God who has indignation every day. God is our example, and He's a righteous judge. What kind of judgments ought I to make? Again, there are consequences to making judgments. That's what verse 2 of Matthew 7 says. There are consequences. The way you judge others is the way God will judge you. If you're harsh in your judgment, God's judgment upon you is going to be harsh. We need to be very careful and aware of those things. And even we're even called upon to judge ourselves, are we not? 2 Corinthians 13 and verse 5. Test yourselves to see if you're in the faith. Examine yourselves, or do you not know this about yourselves, that Jesus Christ is in you, and unless indeed you have failed the test. Here's the test. Did I pass the test? If I didn't pass the test, I need to make some changes, don't I? I've made any judgment about my life on based upon what God's Word says about me. In 1 John 4 and verse 1, beloved, do not believe every spirit, but test the spirit to see whether they're from God, because many false prophets have gone out in the world. I need to make sure that I'm teaching the truth, don't I? I don't want to be a false prophet. I don't want to be a false teacher. I need to make sure that I'm teaching what God said. Judging is not a bad word in the Scriptures, but hypocrite is. Let us not judge hypocritically, but righteously. Is your life what it needs to be? Most of us, most of the time, need some help along the way, don't we? We all have failings. We all make mistakes from time to time. And we need to correct things in our lives. And that's the reason that God put us together in a congregation, so that we could encourage and strengthen and build one another up. Hebrews 10, verses 24 and 25. Encourage one another. Encourage each other to live righteously and godly in this present age. That's the kind of people we want to be. If you need to do something about that, to change something in your life, now's the time. Job says that our life is faster than a weaver's shuttle. They go by faster than a weaver's shuttle. Wow. It's here and then it's gone. James says it's like a vapor that appears and it vanishes away. It's here and gone. In fact, Cheryl and I were just talking about this yesterday. You just don't know if we're going to have tomorrow. You just don't know if you're going to have the next moment. We were at Runza. She took me to Runza for Father's Day. And we're sitting there and we're talking, and we don't know that we will make it home from Runza. And it's less than 2 miles from our house. You see, as a boy, I thought I had 100 years ahead of me. And now at 65, I don't know what I got next ahead of me. If I make it in 2 weeks, I'm going to have some new knees put in. And then I'm going to have to deal with that. but I might not make it there. Friends, we need to keep that in mind. When we judge others, we need to be careful, because God's going to use that judgment against us, or He can. What's your life like? Are you a Christian? If you're not, there's no more perfect time. We've got water prepared, ready for you, that you can be baptized into Christ today. If you just simply need our prayers, we want to pray with you. We want to encourage you to be right with God. That's our whole purpose. Would you come as we stand and sing?